red leather, beaten before he could start. A little round hole had appeared on his shirt. The bullet went clear through his heart.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measures Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. We advise that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, I was hustling around here trying to get the sound up where it's supposed to be. Hopefully everybody has sound and it's doing good. Just kind of operating on it while we were introducing ourselves there. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the 24th of July, and it's a Thursday, quite naturally, because this is what we do on Thursdays. I still have so much stuff that I need to talk about that's not gun-related, but promise is a promise, so we're going to dispense our... refrain from it tonight, but we'll probably throw in a story or two tomorrow during the Liberty Lounge, because there's just some things that have to be talked about. It's just one of those things we got to do. So anyway, until that time, let me find all my stuff. I've got I was going through a bunch of stuff around here and yard sale stuff and whatnot, and I run across a bunch of stuff from turn up the volume. All right, let me see what is the volume's problem here. Give me just a minute and I'll try to see if I can figure out where that problem is at, because volume should be up on everything. Just bear with me a minute here. And there's Republic Defender come in there. Let's see, everything's up there. All right, what the heck? Give me a minute to go through a few settings here and see if I can figure out why it is that I need to turn the volume up. All of those look the same. And that's been refreshed. And let's see here. All right, that should be the same. 007 says it's all right. So, T-Dog, maybe it's on your end. How does everybody else feel? Let's have some feedback here. See what's going on here. Everything seems to be okay on my end. 007 says it's all right. T-Dog says it's not. So, Tinker says it's 5x5. Okay. T-Dog, you've been outvoted, buddy. We're going to have to, you're going to have to do the best you can. I don't know what the problem is, but... All right, I was just out at Schott's Ranch, got back yesterday, and I'm thinking that I'm probably going to go back tomorrow or Saturday morning, one or the other, and get a few things done around there. We've got some, working on getting some videos going and try to get some other marketing things taking place, and right now, I think I told you. Let me put this in your ear here. Sometime between November and the end of January, not sure exactly when, but the one of the writers from SWAT Magazine wants to come out and take our fighting lever action class. We've got the hunting rifle class coming up next month about the, I think it's the 16th and 17th or 17th and 18th, something like that, and then whatever that weekend is in the middle of the month. And we've already getting people signed up for that one. That's going to be a neat class. It's going to be a lot of fun. We've done things similar to that before. And, 007, buddy, you need to come out and check out the Donga now. It's a whole new ball game now. Or part of it is, anyway. But got the hunting rifle class and the fighting lever action class. And this guy is anxious to do this story and already has the go-ahead from his editors and wants to take that class and wants to take that class and add it into some of the survival stuff that they do. And that's exactly why we're doing the class. It's all, you know, as I talked to him on the phone today again. And I told him that, you know, we do a little bit of everything out there. And the reason being is because we think one cannot exist, is inefficient without the other one. Just because you know how to shoot, even if you know how to fight well, it doesn't mean you've got all the answers to it. Just because you know how to, take a piece of something and melt it down, take a piece of flint and carve it into a sharp knife and kill a deer with a rock and gut it with your stone knife and tan the skin and dry the meat and build rope out of grass and do everything else, but you can't shoot and can't fight. So, you know, you really, one is, in my mind, rather dependent on the other, considering the world that we look forward to right now. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it, but what we expect in the future. Now, if you were just lost out in the woods somewhere and never had to worry about fighting or surviving an attack from ne'er-do-wells, then maybe the deer thing would be fine. If you're on the battlefield and everything else is taken care of you and brought to you, you're able to go to the rear and get it, then maybe just as a fighter you're doing great. Otherwise, you're going to be lacking in some areas. So, and when we started putting this whole thing back together here at Schatz Ranch, that's one of the things that one of our themes there is that the two disciplines, I guess you would call it, are dependent one on another. So, yeah, and you know what, Doc, have you seen, I'm going to have to go find a picture of it, somebody go find that picture for me, have you seen those ugly, ruined, despicable, sacrilegious pictures of the beautiful lines of a Marlin 336 destroyed by a forearm with rails all over it and a collapsible stock on the back of it? I am not a fan, thank you. In a way, too, that takes away from the reason why we suggest a lever action in some scenarios. Because, now, if you get right down to it, depending on what's happening, any gun is going to be a threat. Any gun is going to be, catch an eye. And any gun is subject to be taken away or fought over, one or the other. But before it gets to the very worst, and maybe even afterwards, I don't know if you guys ever watched that movie Jericho, but I think that a lot of things in there, of course, it's fiction and a lot of it's BS, but I think there's a lot of things to be learned, and I think it's along the right track for what we expect. And I think that the guy that shows up with an AK-47 and 30-round magazine and all his stuff is probably going to be less trusted and more suspicious or looked at with more suspicion, maybe is a way to put it, than the guy that walks out there with a 30-30. So when you put all that crap all over your 30-30, you're well on your way to being well on your way to being the tactard there with all the tactical stuff that you don't know how to use. So those are some of the things that we're going to discuss, and there's and Doc's got a good point. The black powder weapons probably, no guarantee, but most likely those will be the last to be made illegal. Only bad thing about them is, being slow to reload and having to carry the support equipment to go with it, but it's still a point. People will not be as likely to they'll be more likely to you'll look like less of a threat to them, looking like Davy Crockett out there with your Hawkins and your Colt front stuffer revolver there or whatever. We don't know what exactly it's going to be like and what we're going to face. There's a lot of things to consider, a lot of ideas, a lot of I think this and she thinks that and whatever. So we'll just have to kind of prepare for each thing that we can think of. And one of the things that I've thought of is that something's going to happen that none of us have thought of. And that's what bothers me worse than anything is that we've taken all these precautions and we say, okay, you know, this might happen and that might happen, and I've got everything I need for every possible contingency here, and then something happens that is 180 degrees out from what we've been thinking about. Now, I have no idea what that might be. If I did, then it wouldn't be happening 180 degrees out of what I was thinking about. But, this thing that's going on in Russia over there, you know, another airliner crashed over there in somewhere today. I don't remember where it was. It wasn't in the Ukraine, but unless something's come out since I saw the story, we don't know if it was shot down or, you know, run out of gas or whatever happened to it. So, hopefully something will be out tonight or tomorrow on that. But, these economic sanctions against Russia, that was something we hadn't counted on. And that could escalate into something a little later. But, Doc, you know, it would appear that way. It would appear that way. It would appear that I don't know that it's just the U.S. I think that it may be each of the superpowers or the largest powers and trying to make this happen. And that's everybody wants to, I don't know about everybody, but a lot of people are trying to blame the U.S. for everything that's happened. I'm not so sure that the whole damn bunch of them ain't in cahoots here trying to get something kicked off here. And when they do, how do they benefit from it? Well, number one, they benefit from a tremendous population reduction. But I think that surely they are smart enough to understand that it's going to take years to correct this, to get it back squared away. And that there will be, and I'm sure that they're fully expecting the millions to die. And they're making some kind of plans for that. And what it might be, I have no idea. But it just seems a little odd, some of the events that's going on. Now, if we look at the turn of events in Israel and in Gaza and Russia and China's part in some of this stuff and our little sissy looking little president up there. Have you seen those pictures of him trying to throw a baseball and run a shovel and all that? What a sissy. He's just such a boob. But and something else in it that's going to manifest itself, I think, at some point. I still think that there will be repercussions from some of the activities that went on in at Bundy Ranch. I think that they've been having meetings and planning and training and scheduling and talking and discussing and one thing and another. And I think that they're not done with that yet. There's no way. There's no way that they're just going to walk away and forget that. And there's, we will hear more about that, no question about it. So, anyway, if we, you know, we've talked about this before, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, because we just talked about it, seems like maybe a couple, 3 months ago, 6 months, I don't remember what it was, man. But that is the benefits of carrying, having at least one lever action in your arsenal. It, the balance is unrivaled. I mean, there's not a gun, a stick, baseball bat, pull cue. There's nothing out there that rivals a good traditional lever action for balance. They're fast, they're accurate, they're dependable. Not built for sustained fire. If you're really going in on the battlefield and expecting to shoot, you know, 9,000 rounds an hour, well, that lever action is not going to hold up for very long. But for the average stuff that most of us will encounter, I think it's more than adequate. A few little repair parts, springs, and make sure, especially in the Marlins, that you put a little Loctite in that little screw that holds the loading gate in place, and have an extra screw in your list of in your kit for repair parts for that gun. There were some military lever actions produced. As a matter of fact, there was even one Model 94 with a bayonet lug, but there wasn't very many of them made, and once they come out with other guns that were more robust and able to stand that kind of abuse and use, then the lever actions faded away pretty quickly. But there was a lot of 1873s and lots of 94s that were in the military inventory for a while. And I've actually seen one of the factory guns that has the bayonet lug attached to it. It's in the Winchester Museum in Cody, Wyoming. And I don't think it's a bad idea. They, especially when you look at it from another standpoint, look at it from a convenience standpoint, not just in loading, not just in its sleekness. Well, yeah, I mean, probably some of the sleekness. We'll talk about it in a second. But not just in the balance and everything of it, but look at the sleekness, the smoothness of the overall weapon. When you're going to yank that thing out of the cab of a truck or out of a pup tent or something, you've got a 20-30 round magazine sticking out of it, and these stupid rails all over the front of it. I am still totally at a freaking loss as to why these rails are so romantic to people. I can see maybe a short one on the bottom if you're going to put your vertical foregrip up there, which I'm not a fan of either, and maybe a short one on one side or the other or both for a flashlight. But neither of those are deal breakers for me. So when you're trying to, it's in, sleeping bags, jackets, you've got blankets and stuff laying around, tents, fabric, and, you're using gloves, you've got loose tails, jackets, coat unzipped, whatever. You've got all these things in the way, and then you have all these sharp edges and all these little corners and magazines and pop-up sights and little electronic doohickeys all over it and all this stuff. And to tinker, that's exactly right. That's another one that's like that, is the pump-action shotgun. There's just nothing to catch anywhere. The gun will run just fine. You take almost any semi-automatic, and there is a possibility of getting the, the bolt handle engaging something, something interrupting that action when the gun fires. So that is an issue. climbing over fences and walls and through the brush and all this stuff, and all these magazines and all this crap that you got hanging all over your gun. Now, don't get me wrong, I have an AK-47 and all the goodies that go with it. But you just can't beat a lever action rifle. Now, the pump action 12 gauge Tinker, yeah, I'm okay with that. I am not okay with pump action rifles, most of them, especially not the Remingtons. They're okay for hunting and maybe for the average guy that doesn't intend to get in a whole lot of trouble. But they are finicky and their extraction is extremely weak, and I'm not a fan of the pump action rifles for the most part. But the pump head, the Mossbergs and the older Winchesters and Remingtons, you know, those pumps are awesome. I'm a Mossberg fan myself, but I wouldn't feel undergunned with any of them. What I would say, you know, kind of changing subjects here since DeTinker brought it up. since DeTinker brought it up there, there's several reasons why I prefer the Mossberg over the Remington, and one of those is the ejector. If the ejector breaks on your Remington, you're done. That cannot be fixed in the field. If the Mossberg goes down, all you need to do is take cover somewhere for about a minute and a half, drop another one in it, and you're off to the races. I like where the controls are set up better as far as speed goes and operation with gloves and everything on the Mossberg better. I like where the safety's at better. So there's, now don't get me wrong, the 870 is an awesome gun. I had them all my life up until, I don't ever, my first pump shotgun was a Savage 20 gauge. That was back in the 70s. My next one was an 870. And I was never without one or two 870s in my life up until about 19, let's see, probably about 2000, 2001. So for the last 14, 15 years, I've been strictly Mossberg, and I don't regret it for a second. They're just, I think I'm gonna do a video one of these days on, the two different guns. I have, an 870 here. It's just leftover inventory from the move in the shop, but, and, I got a couple, three Mossbergs. So I'm just gonna maybe do a little short video of why I prefer one over the other. And Doc's got another good point up there. It goes along with the kind of along the same line of thinking as the muzzle loader, and that is casting bullets. Casting bullets for something that's if you're going to do it for a 30-30, you know, probably for the most part, unless you're going to use gas checks and stuff, you're really going to want to load that way down. Down to 30-30 velocities, you know, down to, you know, 22, 23, 2500 feet a second, probably, unless they're gas checked, and then you can push them quite a bit faster. Republic Defender, yeah, the Maverick is worth keeping around for sure. If you're strapped financially and can't afford to get out and upgrade that, the little Maverick works pretty well. The controls are a little different on the Maverick than they are the standard Mossbergs. And they're not built nearly as heavily. It's definitely an economy version. However, unless you're planning on getting into a tremendous amount of trouble and shooting that thing more than you've ever shot it before, it'll probably do you fine for quite a while. But if you get the opportunity, then that's basically all it is. Inside, they're basically a cheaper 500 inside. Outside, they're not. The controls are a little different on the 88 than they are on the 500. But all in all, they're not bad guns. And, you know, if you can save up a little money and you get the opportunity, then look for a... Ideally, I would go a step past the 500 and jump into the 590. The 590 is a magnificent shotgun, as far as I'm concerned. As far as dirty work goes, I'd rather have a Winchester Super X if I'm just going to be shooting skeet and trap and stuff. I love the Super X. I don't even know if they still make them or not, but my first one was, it cost me $500, and I thought, you have got to be kidding me, $500 for one gun? Really? But I coughed it up, because I was shooting a lot of competition at the time, and it served me well, and I'll tell you what, that's one of the things that I have kicked myself over and over and over for getting rid of that gun. I loved it. Never had a problem with it. It was the AK-47 of 12-gauge shotguns, semi-auto 12-gauge shotguns. Never had a problem. Shot the ever-loving snot out of that thing, and never experienced one single issue with it. The 1100s that I had, they were okay as long as you kept them clean. They run pretty well. The weak part of the 1100s is those stupid rubber O-rings up there. As long as you keep extra O-rings around and know how to put them in, what order to put them in, or not the O-rings, but the steel rings on top of it, you know, when you replace it. And it's only about a minute and a half, 2 minute job to replace them. It's not a big deal as long as you have them. So anyway, we have gone right on by this break. So I think we're going to go ahead and throw this in here right quick so I can wet my whistle a little bit and get my voice back. So stay with me. I'll be back in a minute.
I'll be back.
I already said that. Here we go now.
There, stand up and salute while we play the Redneck National Anthem. Redneck, don't give a darn, a redneck. Raised on a farm, I'm a redneck. I'm a six-pack king, I'm a redneck. Just to doing my thing, a redneck.
It's a redneck country cowboy state of mind.
Sounds like it sucks. He can't even bait a hook. He can't even skin a buck. He don't know who Jack Daniels is. Ain't ever drove a truck. She's her daddy's girl, her mama's world. She deserves respect, that's what she'll get. Ain't it, son? They all run along and have some fun.
Every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's a chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
And our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measure Radio Network.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Amy Reynolds inviting you to come see what it's like living way out here, new on Just Measures Radio. We'll talk about cooking, canning, gardening, and homemaking, along with storytelling and nostalgic journeys to yesteryear.
Join Amy every Monday through Thursday morning right here on Just Measures Radio Network for Living Way Out Here, 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 to 11 Central. Don't miss it.
And what I wouldn't give to ride around in that old truck with him. If heaven wasn't so far away, I'd pack up the kids and go for the day.
Come. Okay, are you ready? Here's Corp Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me there.
All right, we're back. There's a new story I didn't see. We'll get into that in a minute. But let's go back here to the chat room here for a minute, and let's in order of efficiency, durability, whatever, would be bottom of the list, but not nearly bottom of the pile, is the Maverick. There are a lot worse shotguns out there. The Maverick, and there's also a thing, and Republic Defender said it right there. He said he thought it was okay for home defense. It's great for home defense. Good, reliable gun. There's a difference between home defense when you may be called upon to use that a few times here and there, even in the worst of situations, if you're not out in the field actually fighting with it. And it'll hold up for a while out there, but it'll wear out faster than the 500. The 500, great gun. The one great thing about the 500 and the 590 is there is all forever more going to be parts out there for them. When they break down, you have problems with them, man, you will never run out of parts. There are millions of 500 and 590s out there. And there are some parts out of the 88s that the Mavericks fit in there also. So, and then next, of course, is the 590, and it was built around those, that need, and that is as a fighting gun. It's actually used by the, accepted by the United States Marines for a while. I don't know how long they used it or if they still do or what, but at least it was chosen for a time. They're a little bit ruggeder, a little bit heavier built, in a little bit heavier barrels than your average sporting barrel and stuff like that. So great gun. And Doc, finding a shorter barrel for that 500 is usually not, well, maybe in your part of the country, obviously you haven't found one yet, but we see them at gun shows and stuff all the time, and there, you know, you can find $40-$50 barrels out there. Some of them have already been cut off, and as long as they're legal, you know, chew up the end of it a little bit and give it a little home crown job there and a little bit of touch up blue, and there you go. And I've done lots of shotguns that way. And the Doc's got three of them. The Persuader, I'm not sure that I can figure out in my mind when there's a good time for a shotgun that has a pistol grip only. I don't mind a pistol grip with a regular shoulder stock, but they don't work well with Mossberg shotguns because of where the safety, safety and the bolt release is okay. Yeah, that sounds better, Doc. Yeah. You know, a lot of these tactards get out there and they get the pistol grip only, not having ever fired one, but they look cool when Arnold Schwarzenegger shoots one. You know, he jacks the thing, picks it out there with one hand and shoots it and everything. Well, when you're shooting blanks, you can get away with that. But as you get older, and with all the stuff that's happened in your life up to that point, you're going to find out that pistol grip absolutely sucks on your wrists. And it's just, it looks like it's so effective and works so good in the movies. I mean, one press of the trigger and the door's torn out of the door frame and the guy behind it's knocked through the wall behind him and everything else. But, no, just don't. I can't really, in my mind, think of one single instance when that gun would be beneficial over anything else, unless it were, you know, to, you know, cut the barrel off to, you know, 14 inches and sneak it in under a trench coat for very close range stuff or something, with knowing that you had backup by somebody with other stuff. I don't know. Maybe breaching doors. You know, if you had one that you cut down to its shortest possible thing and a door breaching device on it, stuck in a backpack and used strictly for that purpose, maybe. I don't know. Other than that, I can't think of any reason why you would want to do that. I don't like them at all. They're not in a, and I don't have any trouble shooting the full stocks, you know, from the hip or one-handed or whatever. You can do anything with that you can do with a pistol grip. So not a fan anyway. But the pistol grip on a Mossberg defeats the whole benefit of having that bolt release on that I operate with my middle finger on my firing hand. It's just a matter of opening my hand up quickly, turning the gun slightly into my finger, and I never have to release my grip. And you can't do that with an 870. So, all right, speaking of shotgun, well, not necessarily shotguns, but Weatherbys. I don't know if you guys knew. Do you remember this song right here?
People say we don't need this war, but I say there's some things worth fighting for.
Well, mighty popular there a little while after 9/11. That's Daryl Worley, and he has teamed up with Team Weatherby, and he's making some appearances out there to just as a promotional deal. That's for their grand opening celebration at the new Cabela's store in Ontario, Canada. So I thought that was kind of... Daryl Worley has a lot of good songs. He's a good guy, I think. But speaking of shotguns, let me tell you something that you probably shouldn't do. There's a gal here in Michigan that had tried to use a shotgun to, quote, make a point during a family argument. Ended up shooting herself in the face with it. She grabbed the gun, slammed it, the butt end down on the floor, causing it to go off, fired right in her face. And 51 years old, and evidently it was off to the, obviously not evidently, obviously, off to the side or something a little bit, because full on, even a 410, you know, that kind of range right in the face, probably going to be no reason for emergency workers to get in any kind of a hurry. But so far, no charges in 5. How do you charge someone for being stupid? Criminal stupidity, or I don't know. but that wasn't a good idea. But it brings us to a point that I've always had a problem with, and that is having a round in the chamber of pretty much any long gun without an external hammer. The reason being because you set them down in the corner too hard, and a lot of people have tried to work on the triggers a little bit and just compounded that problem. And you set them down a little bit too hard, even when they're on safety sometimes, many times. You set them down too hard or drop it, you're passing it down a cliff to somebody else. How many times have I seen that? It's so dumb. Where you grab it by the barrel while it's still loaded and hand it down to somebody. Guys, it is not that much trouble. It is not that much trouble to unload that gun. I know when you're in, especially when you're in the heavy woods, you know, hunting whitetails and stuff. Yeah, most all of us will put a round in the chamber. You don't wait till you jump that deer up, you know, 15 feet in front of you. You may not have time. Plus, it makes noise and everything else. But aside from that, if you're going to put it in there, just remember that it's loaded. Remember that it's, you know, treat every weapon as if it were loaded all the time. I told you the story before about my cousin in New Mexico. Has a cherry, I think it's cherry wood gun case. Beautiful gun case, cabinet, you know, in the front room. And the thing probably cost, I'm sure it was upwards of $5,000. Big, beautiful case. So he comes in with a, I don't remember what the gun was, but he set it down in the gun safe, probably a little too hard, and it may have been an older gun that was worn and whatever. And so whatever the case was, he had it by the barrel, and it was pointed away from him. And he set it down in there, and it went off and went right through the top of that $5,000-$8,000 cherry wood gun cabinet. And he said he was never going to fix it. It looks like hell, but he said he's never going to fix it because of the lessons learned there, and pass that on to his kids and let them know what happened. And, you know, I got to applaud him for that, but he was raised better than that. He knows better than to do that. Certainly he does now, and I'm just very I'm glad that he wasn't injured with it. There's the story of the guy at the gun club in Ohio or Pennsylvania or somewhere back up there, where it was a guy grabbed an Uzi. Somebody had put it up the day before, maybe him. Obviously loaded, one in the chamber. And he grabbed this out of a cabinet. Now, why are these things in a cabinet? They're laying in there horizontally instead of vertically. They're laying in there, and you reach in and you grab the barrel of the gun to pull it out. If you're going to store them horizontally, at least grab them, put them where the barrel is facing the other way, where you have control of the trigger and safety and muzzle and everything as you take it out of there. I don't know if they ever found out whether he stuck it in there loaded, somebody else put it in there loaded, somebody come along in the night and loaded it as a trap. I don't have any idea what happened. But nevertheless, you don't grab guns by the muzzle and pull it to you. I show some very, very ugly pictures of gunshot wounds in some of my classes to try to drive home a point of safety. And one lady said, it was over in Pine Top, she sent me an email. This was back during Hurricane whatever it was in, what was that town in Oklahoma? It started with an M, I think. Bad tornado. I want to say Morgantown, but that's in Virginia. anyway, whatever it was. She said, you know, you showed us those pictures. More Oklahoma. Thank you, Minnie. You showed us those pictures, and I was kind of offended by that, and I didn't like that. And then I saw why. She said the in the rescue crews in Moore, Oklahoma, one of the guys was digging through the rubble there and reached down and grabbed a rifle by the muzzle and pulled it out of the rubble towards him. And she said after seeing those pictures, he said, I just cringed and I realized why you do that. But that just goes to show it kind of getting off on yet another subject here. And that is trying to get people to train. And the answer to that, or the reason, not the answer, the reason for that is because people just don't know what they don't know. And that sums it all up. That's 100% of it. They've done, you know, they've shot a lot all their life and done this, that, and the other, but they, until you point it out to them what it is that they don't know, then they don't know what they don't know. They have to be shown, they have to be told, they have to be taught. And getting people to do that, hell, I've already proven that I can't get them to do it when it's free. Like those teachers. Now, we had other people that did take the classes that paid, of course. They understand the value of training. all right, Doc, I'll try to remember to do that. And if I forget, give me a holler. I think you got my cell phone number. I'll make myself a note here, and maybe I can remember to do that. Well, I'll tell you on myself here. I've been shooting my whole life. I don't ever remember not shooting. I don't remember my first lessons or whatever. I remember killing my first deer when I was 9 years old. I remember being a very aggressive bounty hunter when I was, 6, 7 years old, 8, 9, 10, 12. For several years there, I was a bounty hunter. I got a quarter for prairie dogs and gophers, and I got 15 cents for magpies, quarter for crows, nickel for sparrows and blackbirds, and all the pests that go along and eat grain and ruin fields and break horses' legs and all that kind of stuff. And I got paid well, and I'll tell you, I attribute in no small part my marksmanship skills and everything to those years. And I was pretty damn good. And if I hadn't been offered a free class somewhere, I probably would not have been where I'm at today, because I realized when I took that class that I didn't know what I didn't know. And after that, I became a training junkie. I mean, I took probably 35 classes in different places. And, soaked it all up, and I am not the least bit opposed to do it again, because anytime anybody thinks that they know it all out there, then you're pretty much done. There's there was a what was I trying to say? I guess through all the classes that I've taken and all the people I've done, the instructors I've been in front of and everything, a lot of them I felt should not have been in that position and should not have been teaching. However, even a couple of the ones that were not so good, there's always some little trick, some little something that you might learn, might take away from that and be beneficial to you. So, Yeah, the bad thing about it, Doc, when you get a laugh out of me and it interrupts my train of thought, I usually have to start off on another subject because I don't even remember what the hell I was saying. But that happened. By the way, since I don't remember what I was talking about, I guess we probably should go on to a break right now. Let's see. That's not a long enough break because I need to go visit with my kids for a few minutes and make a quick phone call. So I'm going to throw this in there with it. I know you guys have heard it 1,000 times. This will be 1,001.
Nobody dared to meet him in a press debate. He was nominated by the folks from every state. Yes, a monkey was the president, though maybe not the first.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
Do what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt on the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Enemy is approaching fast, requesting orders. General, what should we do?
There's no response from command. Or from party leader Creedy. Or from the High Chancellor.
Why are you doing this?
Because he was right.
About what?
That this country needs more than a building right now. Needs hope.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Is it common sense to allow your activist judges to ignore your history, your culture, your Declaration of Independence, and every other founding document to remove God from public life? And endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, their creator, not the ACLU, not the will of the atheist, or the anti-Americans that sit on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Separation of church and state, yes. Separation of God from public life, never intended by your founding fathers. Is it common sense that the very political party who claims to be the party of the people and shouts, "We will bring change," consistently stops all common sense legislation to secure your borders, establish workplace verification, and stop taxpayer money for illegals? They call themselves progressive global thinkers. We had another word for them in 1776. We call them traitors. This happened all once before. 232 years ago, it led to revolution and thousands of dead in the streets. It will happen again unless you take back America now.
I hope we have once again reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
From my cold, dead hands.
Only an aroused citizenry will turn this uncommon sense around. And he or she who does nothing now is helping them to destroy America. My name is Thomas Paine, and I approve of this message. I only hope to God you will too.
Colonized America, we won't stand for tyranny. Oh, he. And it's too late to apologize. It's too late. I said it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
Join us every Sunday for the Medic Shack.
The Emperor has been expecting you.
With your host, Chuck Hudson.
You know what the chain of command is? It's the chain I go get and beat you with till you understand who's in command.
Cat Ellis.
You're having far too much fun at my expense.
and our producer, Jacob Hudson.
Who is this genius?
Sundays, 7 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measure Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Coke Reynolds, inviting you to join me for the Shooting Bench PM, the evening edition. Shooting Bench PM is your source for all things guns. Guns, hunting, reloading, firearms training, competition, and a host of other firearms-related topics.
Look out, bushy tail, tonight you'll be in the park. Gun Boogie draws a beat so fine. Look out, big boy, he's loaded all the time.
The Shooting Bench PM does not include news or politics unless it is directly related to your gun rights. Thursday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. Mountain Time right here on Just Measure Radio Network.
I'll be back, little gal, when your pappy runs out of shells.
Join me in the Tinker Shop Saturday evening, just 9 p.m. on JMR. Remember, we all are the library for those who come after us.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, big iron.
Boy, I sat down just in time here. I was coming in and pulling up my chair and saw the thing quit running. Aaron Z joined us. Good to see you in here. It's been a while. Glad you could make it. We've been talking extensively about shotguns and this, that, and the other. Last thing we talked about, I want to expound on this just a little bit more. Last thing we talked about was a lady that shot herself in the face with a shotgun after she slammed the butt into the shotgun down on the floor to make a point. It seems hard for me to understand how people don't get this. Out in, what is the name of that place? 007 would know. Out by, it's out between Aztec and Durango, Colorado. There was a lady out there, and I told you this story. She was unpacking some stuff. Chucker made it in there with us. She was unpacking some stuff and grabbed a rifle and somehow or another pulled the trigger, whatever she did, got it hung up on something, bounced it on whatever it was, it went off, and went through the wall and killed her 8-year-old son. I told you the story of the preacher that was, or not the preacher, the person at the church, was going to sell a Ruger handgun to a guy, and they said, well, where should we go? Let's step into this closet right here. Let me show it to you. So he stepped in this big utility closet. The guy unloads the gun, he thought, and pulled the trigger. The bullet went through the wall and killed the preacher's 7-year-old daughter. I told you the story of the guy that here in Arizona was on the third day of a 5-day defensive handgun class at a popular training facility. And come home come back to the motel after going out to eat a little bit, and they decide they're going to dry practice a little. One guy unloads correctly, the other one did not. And Shoddy's best friend of 13 years killed him dead. There's dozens and hundreds, thousands of stories of just not being aware of where the muzzle is and checking that chamber. Check your chamber. Check your chamber. Every time you pick a gun up, anybody's gun, working or not, no matter how long it's been there, if you're the only one home, I don't care what you're doing, check the chamber. Get in the habit of doing it, check the chamber. Every time you handle the weapon. I don't care if you picked it up, check the chamber. You're satisfied that it's safe, and you set the gun down, turn around, get a drink of water, turn back around, pick it up again. What do you do? Check the chamber. Once again. These people that shoot these IDPA and IPSC matches and stuff, and they get in this stupid, ridiculous, retarded habit of unload, show clear, and pull the trigger. They unload the gun, show the empty chamber to the guy that's standing there looking at it, and then point the gun at the ground, pull the trigger. No. That's one of many, many reasons why I don't do that anymore. That is a very bad habit to get into. And you can always tell. You can always tell the people that shoot these three-gun matches in IDPA and IPSC that do it, you know, as a habit, and you do it all the time, is they get out there and they'll unload, they'll do something, and what do? Point the gun over somewhere and pull the trigger. The trigger does not need pulled. If you have to pull the trigger to see if it's unloaded, I mean, it just, the whole point of that just escapes the hell out of me. Why? Well, there's holes in many a floorboard out there, and many kitchen cabinets and televisions and legs and stuff like that over doing stupid stuff like that. When you unload and show clear, you pop the magazine out. You pull the slide back, jack that live round out, show the chamber to the guy beside you. Why do you pull the trigger? Anyway. Okay. You know, Doc, and you probably remember this, or at least have heard the stories. I doubt if you were a part of it. You may have been inadvertently. But there was a guy that shot himself with a 1911 trying to shave a fraction of it. How do you save time on a 1911 by holstering it with the safety off? At what point, Tex Grebner wound, at what point do you save time by having the safety off? The safety can come off any time after you pass that, what they like to call the 180-degree line. Any time after you get that point away, if that safety can come off on the way to the target, you can't lose time taking the safety off. But I just don't get it. And there's, if you look at some of the popular training here, the ones that are honest enough to post their accidents, you'll see that a significant number of them are from SIGs. Or double-action pistols with decockers on them. Some are with double-action pistols without decockers on them. But there's just as many of them with 1911s, and there's some with Glocks. Almost all of them that we've read about are SIGs, Glocks, and 1911s. And why? Because they're some of the most popular guns out there. That's why. Most of your people that are real serious about training are not using High Points. Most of them are not using Rugers. Well, some are, the SR-9s and stuff like that, but the guys that are pretty serious, most of them Glocks, 1911s, quite a few SIGs. And consequently, most of the actions you read about are those three weapons. But what I was going to say before I got off track here, Doc, you might remember this. Back in the old days, there was a mindset there that when you draw your double-action revolver from the holster, that you need to already have your finger on the trigger and be taking that slack out of the trigger on the way to the target and pulling it so when you get there that the trigger's already most of the way pulled. No. How much time does it take to pull a trigger? Not a lot. And there was holsters made specifically for that reason. And one of the first, or at least one of the most popular ones, was a guy named Tom Three Persons. Used to make these holsters that were made in such a way that you could put your finger on the trigger as you're pulling it out of the holster. Now, I have one. It's not an original Tom Three Persons, but I have one in my list of things to show people not to get. And they wondered why so many cops would shoot themselves in the leg and had bullets in the ground, you know, every few feet on the way out to the target line. Well, that's where that came from. So they did away with those, and nobody makes them anymore. There's probably some custom holster makers out there that may do it for for single actions single action shooter, cowboy shooters and stuff. But anyway, 007, no, the SIG is not much like the P series Ruger. There are some similarities, but not too much. All right, well, let's get. Oh, let me finish one more thought on that. Because of the proliferation of those type of holsters and that kind of training and that mindset back during that time, that would have been right around the turn of the century, up until probably 1935, maybe even into the 40s. And because that was what it was for such a long time, a lot of people learned that. A lot of the people that are now 65, 70, 80 years old have learned in that manner, and they have just because they quit doing it in the 30s or 40s or whenever it was, doesn't mean that it all went away that day. There was still a lot of people that had been taught that way, and it took a long, long time. And we still see a lot of older guys that still try to do that because they haven't been taught any better. They don't know what they don't know. They have to be told. They have to be the suggestion has to be planted to let them know what they don't know. And trigger manipulation and stuff is one of those things. Okay, well, we've got that off my chest. Now, do you see what Stag Arms is doing now? If I had a notion to get an AR-15, this would be an awesome. Of course, I could have Jason Cerakote one of my guns this way. But Stag Arms is coming out now with some American flag rifles. They look nice. It looks really good. But they're Stag Arms, one of the biggest AR-15 manufacturers around, putting now probably those dip type deals, like they do the camouflage and stuff. But on their what's available now is their Model 3 and 3L rifles is using this this water transfer process, whatever it is, immersion printing. And it's a pretty durable. It's not as good as Duracoat or Cerakote, but it's a pretty durable coating, and they look really nice, and not terribly expensive to do. Matter of fact, I had one. I wish I hadn't got rid of it. Sold it to a guy. One of my 338-06 was done that way, not with American flag, but in a camouflage pattern. It was so beautiful, and sold it to a guy over in New Mexico. And I wish I wouldn't have, but I've still got a 338.6, but not that one. So let me, these things run about $1,000, so the color on there doesn't really jack up the price too much. Let me see if I can put this in the chat room for you and let you take a look at this thing. Aaron, no. Actually, I don't need an AR-15. But thanks for your consideration. But no. There you go. Click on that and blow it up. It's a nice, nice looking gun there. Let's see. No. Not going to be happening. Ever. Not that I wouldn't shoot one if I, you know, if that was all I could find and everything. Yeah, I know how to use them. I'm just don't care nothing about them. But anyway, if you're interested in an American flag themed rifle, then right there's Stag Arms is doing it for you. Now, there's a, you know, this 3D printing stuff that everybody has been all the rage about here lately. The guy has made this neat little deal here. And they've taken a 3D printed Ruger style pistol. And this is the guy that did the video calls himself Buck Ofama. That's his name. So he this is an experimenter that printed the receiver of what would be, some of you remember the Ruger Charger pistols. They still make them, I think. It is a semi-automatic, long-barreled handgun would be suitable with something with a bipod and a scope and all that. And, Ruger didn't have anything to do with the printing of this gun. It was just the platform that they chose here. And so this video shows the first test fire of the gun. It seems to work well. Screen printed, I mean, what do you call it? 3D printed. And it's always been legal to make your own guns in the United States as long as you don't make a bunch of them and sell them, as long as they're not prohibited weapons. If they're not fully automatic or, you know, it's not legal for you to make your own 12-inch barreled Mossberg 500 or whatever. But as long as it's legal and you're not selling them, you can make your own. So the... And at the end of the video, this guy shows, he said, if you take my gun, I'll just print another one. 3D printing, dude. It's all the rage right now. And I'm sure ATF and Obama are going nuts over this. But these things, the thing about the Ruger, the Charger, you have to be kind of careful of is you could take that... you could take that action and barrel and put it into a stock of a 10/22 and cut the stock off and make an SBR out of it. So, yes, it will work. No, don't do it. Bad idea if you get caught anyway. But after poop hits fan, that may be maybe one of those little tricks to stick in your mind, back of your mind, and try one day. But says he made this thing with a cheap, small format 3D printer and some parts purchased on the internet with no paperwork, and he said it was trivially simple. This was posted on 4th of July, Independence Day, from somewhere in the state of Nevada. And the guy, in spite of the fact that the guy did nothing illegal, he still decided he would disguise his voice and change his name, and maybe he just did it to make it sound cool. But anyway, while the firearms have been made from home workshops, you know, forever, and they will continue to be, no matter how many guns you take away, no matter how many laws you pass, there'll always be people around like Doc One that will grab some stuff out from under your bathroom cabinet and out of the workshop and throw a little single shot together and have a gun in a matter of an hour or so. So it can definitely happen. What kind of a picture are you showing there? Oh, you're not supposed to show. There's 007 showing a picture of me shooting an AR. How dare you? Unbelievable. That was when we had some guys up there from Tucson area. And he said, you want to try it? Well, no, not really, but I will. So I did. And it was, hang on just a second, I think I've got a, there we go. Okay. All right, let's go here. We've got another one to do here. What's going on here? Let me get rid of this thing. All right, there we go. All right, let's get this ball and rolling here. A lot of stuff, as much as the Supreme Court keeps striking down Obama's stuff, there are still ways that he's been, obviously by this latest AK ban. Actually, and I keep saying that, but it's not a ban. It never was a ban. It's only because the guns can't be shipped here, but it's because of economic sanctions. It has nothing to do with a ban. But I told you 2 or 3 years ago, and 007 would probably remember this, that this was going to happen, that they would come up with a way to do it without Congress, without any anti-gun gunners input, without any, they just do it, and he figured it out. And it's not affecting a huge number of guns right now. Well, it is too. It's all the Segas and the Russian-made AKs. So it's not a deal breaker for everything. But it is causing, as Firewall found out the other day, it's causing some of these other guns to be raised in prices. Now, some of the people haven't done that. I noticed some of our distributors have not jumped on that bandwagon yet, but I've also noticed that a lot of those guns that they didn't raise the price on are all gone now. They're out of stock, as are most of the magazines. And any of the parts or anything that goes along with it, a lot of that stuff is out of stock. And other ones saw it, and they said, okay, well, we're going to nip this in the bud right here. We're going to go ahead and knock these prices up. And Firewall found out that the very next day, less than 24 hours, that the prices had gone up $200. So, and the reason for me to mention all this right now is the fact that this is July, and there's going to be some an election coming up here this year in November. I think it's the 4th, if I'm not mistaken. And it's going to be a real interesting time. It's going to be interesting to see, even though we know and we feel that we know what's going to happen, I wonder how many gun owners, how many activists, as they like to call themselves, are going to feel comfortable enough that they stay home and don't get out and participate in the vote. Well, if that happens, and then you wind up being disappointed about over the outcome, then maybe you should get out and vote. And I know, I've heard it all. The vote does no good, the whole thing's rigged. Yeah, well, maybe it is, but I can tell you one thing for damn sure. And this, you can take this to the bank. If you don't vote, there is absolutely no possibility that your vote will count. If there is any possibility that it's not rigged, or not rigged as bad as you thought it was, If you don't get out there and do it, what does it cost you? Nothing. A few minutes of your time. There's no detrimental reason, you know, there's no detriment in any way to voting. You may not get what you want, and maybe it's not all on the up and up and everything else, but to say that it's not and just stay home is a cop out. I don't know if because you're lazy or dumb or whatever it is, to go do it. And if it works in our favor, great. If it doesn't, then it wouldn't have anyway, so big deal. It's like insurance. You spend all this time, well, my house is never going to burn down. Then it does, and you don't have insurance, then what? Well, if it don't and you have insurance, so what? You've been paying for insurance all this time, but what did it hurt? Same thing. It's like one of the things that I like to tell people all the time is like believing in God. Okay, if you don't, that's okay. But if you lived your life in such a way that would be in accordance with his teachings, even if you didn't believe, just on the off chance that it was real, that it was a real thing, and there really was a God, and you got up there and you said, boy, I'm sure glad I did what I did, because now I see, I understand now what might have happened if I hadn't have. So you can't go wrong by living a good life, whether you believe or not. That's the way I, one of my several things that I compare that to. All right, I'm going to compare, taking a little break here to going to get and drink water and see what happens here. So give me just a minute. Let me plug in a couple of these other deals here. And
I'll be back.
You fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
Bring it on. If you're tired of being spoon-fed politically correct pablum every time you turn the radio on, join Corp Reynolds for The Shooting Bench here on the Just Measures Radio Network for the most politically incorrect firearms information program on talk radio.
I heard your teeth chatter from the cold outside. Saw the bullets open up the wounds in your side. I saw the young boys as they began to fall. You had tears in your eyes, cause you couldn't help it all. But you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
The Shooting Bench, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central.
The folks thought he'd call a great victory ball, but he asked the band to play the song Dixie. For you, Johnny Reb, and all that you believe, cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb.
I am here in protest with the college students from Georgia State and Georgia Tech.
Protesting what?
Well, they're protesting against equality and change, you know. We don't like the way the government is allowing us to be able to, you know, utilize our various, degrees and, you know, our job market into the, you know, society without it having to be uproared by the, you know, fear of what the government is constantly putting on us. Everywhere I go traveling throughout the train system and the rail system, you have homeland security everywhere. So, you know, how can I very well concentrate on, you know, getting a job and getting through school without having to, how can I stay focused without having to worry about, you know, whether or not I'll make it home safe, or, you know, this fear factor that the government has going on with us thinking that something bad is going to happen with our serenity and our peace and our homeland security will become insecure. And it bothers me for these school-age kids to be going through what they're going through, I don't think it's fair at all.
Hurricanes, tornadoes, western firestorms, earthquakes, financial collapse, government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Whom do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the MediChat, and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. The MediChat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Shop Saturday evening is 9 p.m. on JMR. Remember, we all are the library for those who come after us.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Corp Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench, here on Just Measures Radio.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me.
You know, the this safety thing sometimes doesn't get used as often as it should. Not only, I mean, obviously not in the context we were talking about a while ago, but in courtrooms, elevators, offices, places where, and I've seen people that are basically pretty safe for the most part, but how many times does it take? You get one chance only to do this correctly. So there was this article about courtroom safety from a guy that you know, works in that field. So the majority of us don't spend a lot of time in courtrooms. If we do, you're probably not carrying a gun anyway. But anyway, most of your lawyers don't even spend that much time in a courtroom. But you're some of the safety, what do you call the guy, the bailiff, and some of those, you know, there's quite a few people that carry guns that are in them often. So, like the most of your hospital emergency rooms out there, guns are prohibited in most places. And courtrooms, same reason, is they can be dangerous places. People can, you find people that are not particularly happy in either place. You find drunks and people that are hurt and mad and whatever. So there's We find courtroom security, just like emergency room security. It's beyond me. I am a state certified licensed armed security guard in Arizona. Big deal. The amount of training you have to go through, 2 days, 15, 16 hour class. Much of it, you know, very little of it actually is shooting or handling guns. Most of it is about laws and stuff, what you can and can't do. And that's fine, there's just not enough shooting there. And to think for some reason that your certified, trained, licensed armed security guard is for some reason better qualified or qualified at all to be handling weapons in places where there are lots of people, where things may go wrong, where there may be a scuffle or an attack, somebody trying to break somebody out, you know, whatever, a jealous husband, you know, whatever the case may be, to me is absolute, it's ludicrous. Those are the situations your armed security guard is probably better off standing at the door at Walmart. Because if something actually happens, there are very, very few guards that remotely have the amount of training needed to perform well in a situation like this. So there's a few things that you might consider if you find yourself in that situation. And that would be, don't get between deputies and the people they have in custody. Stay completely away from them. Pay attention. Becoming a hostage is not a good thing. When you hear, and this can go for, you know, anywhere, you hear loud, angry voices, it's none of your business. If you're not in danger and your loved ones are not a part of it or close to it, go somewhere else. Go the other way. Don't be there. Best way to not get involved in a fight is don't be there when it happens. It doesn't matter what they're saying. Don't be curious. Just get away. If you're in a place like, and that goes for just about anywhere, it's not up to you to break up these things. If you or your family is not in danger, just go away. Stay out of it. Now there's a limit to that. You got a 6 foot five, 260 pound drunk out there that's grabbing a hold of his 5 foot two, 125 pound wife, and then of course most of us would get involved in that. But if there's, we're talking about courtroom stuff, if there's deputies there and other people with guns and other security guards or whatever, that's their business. That's what they get paid for. Stay out of it. When the deputies show up at the courtroom in what looks to be more than an average amount of numbers beyond what it should be, what's considered normal for these type of in-custody situations, might be a good time to leave or at least set close to the door, because that tells you right there that the threat level may be elevated a little bit from what is normal. It's good situational awareness to be aware of what's going on in the courtroom as much as possible, including where all the observers sit. That would be a good place to for somebody to roost if they wanted to solve get a shot at somebody for some reason. So don't get between the podium and the door. If anyone out there, defendant or otherwise, decides to make a very quick, unscheduled, unlawful exit out of there, there's no reason to be between him and the door. Try to avoid those areas where there any path where somebody may take off, and you may be in a position where he runs over there and just grabs you and uses you as a shield to get out the door. This is not a good career move. So just don't be there. Don't leave any of your papers or briefcase or jacket or any of that kind of stuff anywhere as near people that are in custody. The reason should be fairly obvious to you. And this is something that I won't do. I use it as an excuse. I know I could get a clip on, but always be aware of the dangers of wearing a tie. If you're going to wear a tie, it needs to be a clip on. I mean, it's like a woman with a ponytail. What a great handle that is. Somebody grabs hold of that tie, and for the average person, they've pretty well got you. If you want to wear one, nobody can tell the difference whether they're clip-ons or otherwise. So they grab that clip-on tie. There's going to be a just a moment there that you may get the upper hand as they are surprised with what happened there. The most dangerous time in court is anything that has to do with child custody, child support, restraining orders, alimony, all this family stuff. So you want to be especially alert and aware when these type of cases are going on. The risk is lower during high-profile criminal cases than it is during these family cases. People get, what would you call it, apathetic, or they feel like they're, you know, in those types of cases with all the kids and everything, they feel like there's less danger, when actually it's just the other way around. And probably one of the best things to do is try to control that natural curiosity. We can go back up when we first started this and talk about the person that is using foul language and is mad, his voice is getting higher or louder. Well, don't be curious. Just leave. You can always find a reason to go to the bathroom or something. So any place where there's people, where there's high stress, high emotion, anything from rock concerts to emergency rooms to whatever, then sometimes they're not the right place to be. Hank Williams Sr., remember the song, one of his first songs, Mind Your Own Business? In that song, there's a line that says, minding other people's business seems to be high tone. I've got all I can do, just minding my own. So, not bad advice from Hank Williams there. Anyhow, well, I want to, in this last few minutes, I want to remind everyone again of the thing. Now, if you guys have, friends that are, especially in Arizona, western New Mexico, southern Colorado, southern Utah, maybe even eastern California. Matter of fact, we had a guy from California in our last free class that was free to teachers. We had a guy that drove over here from California. He drove, you know, 10, 12 hours, whatever it was, to take that free CCW class. And we had several of them come down from New Mexico to take that class. So if you know somebody that's within a reasonable driving distance that would like to get free concealed weapons training, or a teacher, the teachers, principals, school nurses, cafeteria workers, the janitor, if they work in a public school and they work around the kids, we're offering free concealed weapons training for them. There's only one more chance of that happening, and that is going to be on August 1st. I think it's the 1st. I mean, you have to look at the schedule. By the way, our new website is a whole lot better, much nicer than our old. We still got some tweaking to do. I'm still working on some of the payment things and stuff on it, but a lot better than it was. So check it out at ShotsRanch.com. And there's a couple of different schedules. I have put, there's one that's just the class calendar that covers everything. And then there's another one that is on the firearms page that I put up that has all the firearms related classes except for the combat medic class, because I am involved in that class, and the 8-hour disaster preparedness class because I conduct that class. So those are the two things that are on there that are not particularly firearm related. So other than that, let's see. Let's see what's going on right there. Who all is in here anyway? I didn't even look here. Tinker, Minnie, Mother Earth, still, I don't know if she's still there or not. She's been there quite a while. Mountain Shooter, not too late. Republic Defender, we talked to him. Rights at Risk, T-Dog, Aaron, Chucker, a couple of Anonymous. Cowboy, 007. Alright, good deal. Okay, well, the hunting rifle class is coming up 16th, 17th of next month. The lever action class. You know, I don't know. We just, the next one, I think, no, surely there's one. Let me look here. I know there's one in November, November 2nd. But I think there's another one between now and then. I finally got smart and loaded the schedule up on my phone so I could see what in the heck was going on. Somebody had asked me and said, well, I don't have any idea. I have to find a computer and see. All right, here we go. August, there is not one. September, there is not one. Oh, yeah, we've added also some ladies' personal protection classes. Two-day class is going to be scheduled around. It's not just the same two-day personal defense handgun class that's for ladies. It's going to be tailored around how ladies dress and, you know, what they wear, where they go, their activities, the different types of guns, their upper body strength, a lot of different things on there that are not the same as a man. So, as a matter of fact, I think that Amy is going to help me with those. And we've got one of those coming up in the end of September, another one the week before Thanksgiving. And where is, let's see, long-range handgun. That's a good one. That's coming up in October. Shotgun classes, precision rifle. Yeah, the next one is on the 2nd of November. And we talked to the, if you guys want to shoot with one of the writers from SWAT Magazine, then watch the schedule. And it's probably going to be, let me get my calendar, my other calendar up here. I just talked to him today, and we're making arrangements for that. And that will be on, hang on, stand by. It's going to be right after the first of the year. It's going to be the fighting lever action class. Will be on the 18th of January, just before the SHOT Show. So, if anybody wants to get in on that, well, give us a holler. All right, that's enough. I've run out of things to talk about, so I'm going to get out of here and let you guys get on with your evening. I appreciate you joining me, and we'll see you tomorrow night, probably from Shots Ranch with Liberty Lounge, and we've got a couple of news stories I need to throw in there. Just got about 300 of them, really. But I'll spare you all that and just throw in a couple. So, Aaron, Chucker, you guys don't show up here very often. Appreciate you joining us. And we'll see you tomorrow night. Bye-bye.
Nobody knew where he came from. They only knew he came in.
Uh-oh.
Whoops. Wrong one. Sorry about that.
Have guns that will reach the card of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire heeds the calling wind. A soldier of...
Okay, that about wraps it up for another PM edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me every Thursday night for 2 hours of 99 and 44 100% pure gun talk. Good night.
A chestnut of silver is his badge of trust.